Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Anne Wilkins was finishing a singing lesson with Sarah, and I began by asking Anne how long she'd been so involved with music.
To the extent that I do now, the last 5 years. And I used to do a full-time job. I worked for South Wales Police, firstly as a typist and then an admin assistant, and did a bit of teaching in the evenings. But then it was always something I wanted to do. So when I left work, I let it be known among friends and people I knew that I was hoping to start doing more teaching. And I also put my name on the music teachers website, so people were able to find me on the internet, which has proved to be quite useful. Quite a few of my pupils have found me through that.
Are your pupils working towards anything?
Most of them are, yes. There are varying levels of exams. Some are just sort of grade one, some are higher grades. Grade five, I think, is the highest I've got at the moment. I've got some adult pupils as well, and I encourage them to do exams. One of them has recently passed grade two piano with merit. So I encourage them to aim for something, to have a goal and something to aim for and something to take you out of your comfort zone.
Now, examination boards, Anna, are notoriously bureaucratic. Yeah. So how do you cope then with all this paperwork and form filling, everything that you have to do?
Well, the Associated Board are well known for having a form which is inaccessible to anybody with a visual impairment. So I discovered when I tried to enter someone online. So what I do, I phone them and they just fill the form in for me. I explain why I can't do it, and they're always very accommodating, very helpful. And they just put the entry in for me, and I email the details to them to confirm everything, and it just goes in like that.
You mentioned your visual impairment. Can you tell me about your sight loss, Anne?
I'm totally blind, and the reason is, I think the medical term is retinopathy of prematurity, which means I was premature, like a lot of people were, quite a number of years ago. I was given oxygen because I was premature, and they couldn't gauge it very well, so I had too much, and that was what damaged the back of the eyes. I was 1 pound 11 ounces when I was born, and I remember when I was growing up, my mother took great a pleasure in telling people, because as a teenager I used to get so embarrassed, and I'd walk out and I'd just sort of try and change the subject, or you know, I just wasn't interested, you know, at the time. And there were quite a few people that I was at school with who had the same eye condition, so it was quite common. From about the early 1940s to sort of the late 50s, early 60s, and then they sort of, you know, they discovered how to properly gauge oxygen. And it does still happen now, but not as often.
Did you have to go away for your schooling?
I had to go away. I didn't live in Bridgend at the time, so school was Bridgend, although I lived in Glyneath at the time. Because at the time, anybody with a visual impairment or any disability, I think I'm right, with any other disability, had to go to special school. So I came away from home when I was 5 and came to school in Bridgend, which was a horrible experience. And I've told people since, you know, who've got children who are sort of 4 and 5 years old, and they can't believe that I was really sort of torn away from my parents and had to come to school in Bridgend. And I was talking to somebody on the phone last night who was older than me but was in school with me for a while before they left. And this person said, well, I just remember you crying. And it was absolutely true. That's all I did for about the first 2 or 3 years I was there. I lost weight. I withdrew into myself. And there was just nothing good about it at all. And then I went away then to Shrewsbury, to what's now the Royal National College for the Blind, which is now in Hereford, but it was then in Rowton Castle in Shrewsbury. And I went there for 4 years to do a secretarial course. And then I started to think about applying for jobs. Yeah. And I applied to South Wales Police. And I've done a lot of, in my life, I suppose, done a lot of firsts. If people tell me you can't do something. I just say, watch me. And I remember somebody who used to help sort of place people in employment coming to visit my parents. And then they asked my parents if I'd said what I'd like to do. And I'd always thought that the police sounded interesting if there was ever a vacancy. So I'd sort of mentioned this. And they said, oh, no, 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 no. A blind person can't work for the police. No, no, it's not possible. You know, they wouldn't be able to do that. So when I eventually met this person, I quoted names and addresses of people I was in college with who'd gone to work for the police forces in their areas where they lived. After that, then, I had an interview the April before I left college. And they told me that I would be successful on the basis of my exam results. So if I'd failed, I wouldn't have got the job, basically, which was right, because I didn't want a job on sympathetic grounds. I wanted it on my abilities and qualifications. So I did pass all my exams, and I left college, started work a fortnight later, and then worked for 38 years.
Has the music always been there, your interest and love of music?
It has, really, yes. Although, probably at the end of my third year in college, I failed an exam, and because at the time I'd never failed an exam before, and it was a huge disappointment, and I was going to give up music. And everybody was saying to me, no, you know, you're wrong. And I was convinced that I was hopeless at music. I didn't do anything with it for probably about 2 years, I think. And it was as if I had a mental block. That was something I didn't think about, didn't give much thought to, because it was too painful, because I'd failed this exam. And then after I'd started work, I met some family friends who were singers, and I went to a few concerts that they did. And one of them offered to give me singing lessons. And I laughed because I thought, don't be so ridiculous. You know, me singing, because I'd always been back row of the choir in school. Not a lot of encouragement to sing as a soloist. And I wanted to be a soloist. I wasn't interested in sort of just being a choir member, although I have been a member of choir. I decided that's what I wanted. And I remember going to the Miners Eisteddfod in Porthcawl. And I was really shocked because I came second, and I'd never done anything with competitions before. And I thought I wouldn't get anywhere. And I got through my prelim and I came second, biggest shock of my life. And I applied then to the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. And I went there as a part-time student with a few teachers at different times over a couple of years. And I got grades 6, 7 and 8 in singing, and that surprised me as well. I got the exam, the grade 5 music theory exam, which I'd failed, because the music teacher really became an inspiration and taught me Braille music in a way I'd never been taught it before. And she was a sighted person who'd learned Braille music, but she really explained how to relate the Braille music to the notes. And that's why Braille music is one of my passions. And, you know, a lot of blind people will say, oh, I'm not interested in Braille music. I love it, because it allows you to be totally on the same level as a sighted musician. I just simply love that. So that helped an awful lot. And then I was determined to get 3 grade 8s. So I got grade 8 singing, as I said, but I also did grade 8 piano and grade 6, 7 and 8 theory through a correspondence course with a friend in Liverpool who is also a blind person. And she would enter me from Liverpool for the exams, and I would try them in Bridgend. And we did it like that within 4 years.
When I came in, we were giving Sarah her lesson. And during the lesson, you put a CD on.
Yeah.
Are you happy to use technology, Anne?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Because there's no right or wrong way to teach music or to learn it. I've said that I use Braille music, which I do, but I also use technology, iPads, iPhones, digital recorders, CDs, anything really that people are happy to use. The CD that Sarah and I used today was one that comes with the Associated Board exam book. So she'd bought her own book and the CD just came with it. So it's got on it, it has the accompaniments for songs and the correct pronunciation for words as well. So, for example, the song we were working on today, she will learn that in German. So the words are on the CD for her as well when she's ready to learn that.
Good. Well done, Sarah. That was much better.
Sarah at her singing lesson with musician Anne Wilkins.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Anne Wilkins champions Braille music, and so I asked Anne to explain it to me.
It's a completely different system from staff notation, because in print you've got the five lines and the four spaces. There's nothing like that in Braille. It's a completely different system. Instead of clef signs, you have what they call octave signs, and there are rules and regulations to do with those. And you really use all the signs you would learn in Braille and others that are sort of have been Braille music signs allocated to certain, you know, signs in music. So it's really using the whole of the Braille code related to music.
Mm. You are a Braillist, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
So was it a big change then to music Braille?
In school it was, because it wasn't explained to me in a way that was very interesting. But then when I sort of started all over again with this teacher at home, it really did change it. She really made it much, much more interesting than anybody else ever had. So I was lucky in that respect that I just soaked it up like a sponge. And I think then I desperately wanted to learn, and that made such a difference. You have to memorise. You can memorise a few bars at a time, but you can develop the number of bars of music that you can learn just by doing it frequently and by, you know, trying to learn a few more bars at a time. I'd say between 4 and 8 bars would be a reasonable amount of music to learn in one go, really. Some people can learn more, but you just have to learn it, and it can be, you know, quite slow. But once you've got it, you've got all the detail of the music as well. It's different to listening to something, because you've got all the detail in Braille that a sighted musician would have in front of them on a copy of music as well. And that really does make such a difference. I went to see this lady who's now my singing teacher, Jeanette Masocchi, who's absolutely wonderful and inspirational, not just to me, but to all her students. And she's known as an accompanist and a singer and a wonderful teacher. And I went to get her advice, and she suggested a diploma. And I'd been told by other people that I wouldn't be able to do singing diplomas because of the visual aspect of it. And she said, no, of course I'd be able to do a diploma. And we started with Licentiate of Trinity College, which I got, and then Fellowship of Trinity College, and then Associate of the Royal College of Music. So I owe her such a lot. And then I started to compete seriously. And then one summer, a few years ago, I decided to do all the little Eisteddfods down in West Wales. And I went to places like Cardigan, Newcastle Emlyn. I did the Abergavenny Eisteddfod. I counted up. I did, in a, you know, total of about 2 months, I did 6 of the smaller Eisteddfods, which doesn't sound an awful lot. But when you're travelling and staying in different B&Bs on different weekends and going on buses and trains and local transport, and I did it all, but I had a wonderful summer. It was fantastic.
Explain to people who have no idea what an Eisteddfod is and actually how important they are.
They are arts and literary festivals, and there's a national one, there's an international one, but there are smaller ones which take place mainly, I think, now in North and West Wales. And there are competitions for singers, for instrumentalists. They have poetry competitions, short stories, some of them have. All the arts, really, arts and crafts, all sorts of things like that. And there's always a preliminary round, and then they usually choose 3 people to go on the stage. for the final of the competition, and then, you know, it just all happens from there.
Once you get on the stage, then obviously you're performing to an audience there.
Yes, and in 2012, then I won the David Ellis Memorial Blue Ribbon at the National Eisteddfod, which was in Cowbridge.
On your wall above your piano, you've got the diplomas that you mentioned earlier, and obviously then you've got the two blue ribbons.
One is the cardigan and the other one is the national one, which I'm really proud of. I won it. It took weeks to probably a couple of months for me to take it in, because I just couldn't believe I'd won it. When I won the soprano solo that year, I thought, right, okay, fine, we'll go for the blue ribbon, and you know, you automatically go on to the blue ribbon if you win your category you're in. And I just couldn't believe that I'd won it, because the other competitors were good. There were six of us, so it was a tough competition.
When you're rehearsing for something like that, do you accompany yourself? How does that work?
I usually work with an accompanist and with my singing teacher, obviously, as well. We chose two, and they were sort of contrasting. One was from an oratorio, and the other was a different song altogether. The one I chose was by the Welsh composer Dilys Elwyn Edwards, and who wrote a lot of lovely music. So I worked with an accompanist over probably about 6 months before I did the competition. And of course, because I'd competed before, I knew exactly what to expect, and just went into all the finer details, learnt the music, learnt the Welsh words and the correct pronunciation and the phrasing, and equally importantly, what everything meant, because you have to, you know, interpret it correctly, and the adjudicators are really, they look for all sorts of details in everything.
So music now then is your everyday life, I imagine, Anne?
It is now, yes. I sort of work for recitals when I can get them. They are sort of, don't happen as often as I'd like them to, but they do happen. And oratorio performances are great for me, because they're things that I can do well and can work with an orchestra and other singers as well. And oratorio is lovely to sing because it's quite dramatic. And I like Handel's Messiah, because I did that quite recently in Newport Cathedral with the orchestra that I'm secretary of. But I also like Elijah as well, because there's just a lot more to me, a lot more in it. It's much more difficult to learn. And the soprano really controls, you know, the whole thing in a way, in the part that she sings, because if she doesn't come in the right place, you've had it basically. But you've got such a big choir and orchestra and three other soloists, and I love working with other soloists as well, because you sort of feed off each other, and if you know each other and get on well as well, it's great. They're called St. Olo's Players. Their director of music is Jeanette Masocchi, who is my singing teacher as well. And she got me involved in this, knowing that I had secretarial skills. They're based in and around Newport and Cardiff. They've got residency status in Newport Cathedral now, and they've been in being as a proper organisation for about the last 5 years. I got involved with them not long after I retired from my job, and I was asked if I'd like to be secretary, and I've been doing it ever since, really, and they keep on asking me to carry on, which is great. And I enjoy it because I get involved in all kinds of things, like, you know, booking different players to play in the orchestra and getting to know musicians. And it's lovely. I really enjoy it.
Tell me what you get up to then in a typical week, Anne.
Oh, gosh. Well, sometimes we can have a committee meeting for the orchestra. So I go to Newport for that. And then I teach as well on a Monday and a Thursday and a Friday. And I also run a little choir of blind and partially sighted people who rehearse here on a Tuesday. I try to keep Wednesdays and most of Fridays fairly free. That's the other thing I do as well. Make time to go for my singing lessons, because I travel up to between Abergavenny and Monmouth. But people do ask me, you know, why do you go so far away? And I won't go to anyone else. So, yeah, my week is quite busy, really, full of music.
Musician Anne Wilkins, singing E.T. Davis's Anissa Plant, The Children's Island, and also a clip from Handel's Judas Maccabeus, the aria from Mighty Kings.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.